We are back.
Blog Talk Radio.
Big Dreams Radio. Big Dreams, Life After...
from 9 to 11, and also Sundays. Don't miss her on Sundays from 12 to 2. So that is something to look forward to. We have some announcements for you and some great news that are coming up. So that song you just heard was by the very talented Irving Evans. That is one of his new songs from his mixtape called Therapy Sessions. And you can look him up on Facebook. And he's actually going to be on the show later on tonight on the 10:25. So make sure you log in and you listen to him. So we have some announcements. As you guys know, we are nationwide, internationally as well. So we're going to have some announcements from around the country. If you happen to be in the Cary, Illinois area, you need to get out there and go out for a good cause. They're having the fundraiser concert on August 24th at Lake Julian between 1 and 8 p.m. That is to help support the Cary Flood Relief and the Honor Flight. Share your community support and help out flood victims from Cary and other veterans as well. If you go to my Facebook page, you will actually see a link there. So obviously, if you're not in the area, any donation would be greatly appreciated, so please make sure you help out as every little bit helps. Also, from the area of Pennsylvania, we have the 9th Annual America First Car Show, Operation Warrior Relief. We need to show support for our veterans. This is supporting our wounded troops. That'll be Sunday, October 6th. From 2 p.m. to 4 p.m., the rain date is October 13th. There's going to be classic cars, street rods, antiques, muscle cars, trucks, 4x4s, motorcycles, food, drink, and music. The space is limited to the first 150 vehicles. Pre-registration will be $12. The deadline for that registration is September 28th. Day of show registration is $15. That is actually being sponsored by Master Gunnery Sergeant John W. Zingle. He is from the 23rd of the Marine Corps League, and they do all their fundraising for the Toys for Tots. I know we're only in August, but it comes up quick. So we're starting our drives early this year to try to get as many toys as possible. As you guys know, the economy hasn't exactly been the greatest, so the need has continued to rise, and we need to collect as many gifts as possible. So if you're in the area, come on down. Show us the muscle cars that you have. Also, speaking of Toys for Tots, Toys for Tots, 10th Toys for Tots train, that is also going to be in the Pennsylvania area, Abington. We are going to have Saturday, November 23rd. Put that on your calendars, guys, from 9 to 2, DFW Post 676-2519, Jenkintown Road in Glenside, Pennsylvania. Admission is $4 for adults. Kids under 12 are free. If you are a vendor and would like a table, it's $15 per table. And it's great. It's actually going to be set up to look like a train for the kids. It's going to be fun times. Also, if you want, bring an unwrapped new toy for kids. That, again, was going to go to Toy for Tots. A lot of these toys also goes to some of our service and women's families because they are overseas. And as you know, when you're in the military, you don't make as much money as you usually did. So all of a sudden, you're overseas, you're serving your country when you're activated, and there's still bills to pay. So some of these toys will go to servicemen and women's families to help them out during the Christmas holidays. So, yes, that is something that you want to keep on your calendar. Also, for the Benefits Dare program, also in Glenside, Pennsylvania, Sunday, September 22nd, will be the motorcycle ride. Registration starts at 9:30. Ride starts at 10:30. And there's also a 5K run that starts at $8.30, $20 per person. And all of this information will be up on our website, www.ordinarywoman.com. We will put that up tonight. Also, for most of you that know, last year the reason my show was on hiatus for so long was that we had a death in the family. Our beloved Sarah, who most of you know, battled cancer for close to 2.5 years. She passed away last March. And we decided, March of 2012, we decided to honor her memory. We started the Sarah Joy Foundation. And this year, on September 15th, in Media, Pennsylvania, we'll be having the inaugural 5K Road Race Walk fundraiser. That is going to be at the Ridley Creek State Park in Media, Pennsylvania. All the information will be up on the website, as well as if you go to Facebook and you Google it under events, you will find it. So please, if you are in the Media, Pennsylvania area, come on down September 15th. The road race starts at 10 a.m. We have medals for all age groups. We have a fun run for the little ones, and afterwards there'll be a family appreciation day, free food and drinks and games for the kids. Also, if you are unable to attend, we are doing a virtual runner program. So if you go to our website, www.sarahsjoyfoundation.org, for a $25 tax-free deduction, because we are 503C corporation, nonprofit, for a $25 donation, which you can write off your taxes, you can sponsor a virtual runner. You'll be entered into raffles to win some amazing prizes, so we hope to see you down there. A lot of housework. Just before we have our guest tonight, I'm so excited. We're going to have the amazingly talented Adam Dawes. He was just in a 48-hour film festival movie that they made, and it was incredible because for some of you that aren't familiar, the 48 Film Festival, they give you a genre. There's a time limit. There's a certain word they have to use, and there's a certain object that has to be used in the movie. They have exactly 48 hours to do it, so it's a weekend. You're filming a movie. You're writing it. You're filming it. You're editing it. It has to be turned in on time. So Adam Dawes got to be the main actor in this movie, and we'll share a little bit more about that character when Adam is on. But I have to tell you, definitely, yeah, Adam kind of surprised me there with his acting chops. He's very humble. He always talks about how his acting skills aren't up there. I don't know. I think he did his own on this one. And also, after him, we will be talking to the ever-popular Clarence Penselman Pointer. Some of you haven't seen his work. It is out of this world. Clarence is a self-taught artist, and he does pencil works, and his works are unbelievable. He has done sketches of presidents, and I can't even call them sketches, amazing drawings. They look so real. Some of them look like actual photography pictures. So we're going to be talking about him and some of the stuff he's done, and we're wrapping up the show with our third guest, which is Urban Evans, which you just heard his song. So I am very excited to welcome this guest. So coming up now is the very talented Adam Evans. Hey, Adam, are you there?
Yes. Hi, how you doing?
Very good, Adam. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
So I have to ask you, Adam, because I'm going to get right into this, because I have like a bazillion questions for you.
Okay.
Now, you are originally from where?
Well, I grew up in Bell Harbor. Went through the school system and everything there, and then moved to Southern Maine in 2006, and I've been down here ever since. And so, yeah.
Now, I have to ask you, you're obviously always in the creative spectrum with your career and your callings that you do. So you are a graphic designer, or what exactly is your trade by nature?
Well, it's kind of multidisciplinary based on my studies at UMaine, which was a Bachelor of Arts in New Media, which was multidisciplinary, which was graphic design, informational design, and multimedia, which that's where the video editing and the film minor came in. So my skills kind of were produced by that major because the varying courses that were available.
So my question is, did you always know you wanted to be into graphic design? Were you one of these people that was always trying to create things or making movies in your backyard? How exactly did you get started?
Well, it actually all started with in high school. I was part of the high school newspaper. We had several classes in publishing, and so that's what really started with the graphic design side of things, and it kind of just developed into the film and the other instructional design and multimedia design, it all started with print.
Okay, so did you do this in high school? When you were in high school, did you do any of that work, or is this something that you did as a hobby and then decided to go to school for it? How exactly did it turn into a full-time vocation for you?
Well, I had an interest in high school to doing graphic work right from the get-go. So I actually took all of the graphic design and multimedia courses that the high school offered and then went to vocational school my senior year to further my study. And that just evolved right into college. I was very career-driven right through from sophomore year of high school all the way up to now. So that's always been a constant.
Okay, so I'm going to get a little bit back. I'm going to get back to the graphic design because we have an announcement that we'd like our listeners to listen to, and also we're going to talk a little bit more about that announcement in a little bit, but I want to kind of leave that for the show, and I really, because I need to ask you about that. So, on top of the graphic design, you're also an actor.
Yeah, that's a
hobby. How long have you been acting?
Well, it's only been really recent. I really got interested in back in 2009. So, I do mean amateur. It's a hobby of mine. I like doing it. I have fun with it. So, that's why, I enjoy it.
Okay, now I know you've taken some classes and you've had some training in acting, and you had told me earlier that it's a hobby, but just recently you came across a role that kind of really gave you an opportunity to really sink your teeth into the acting craft and to create a character. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it was actually for the 48 Festival. It was a very quick evolving, how that just came to be. The director asked me to play a really challenging role, which was at first really uncomfortable, and it was very uncomfortable throughout the whole filming of it, because it was totally against what I am, character-wise, moral-wise, and all that. And so definitely learned a lot acting-wise while doing it. So I grew that way. But, I'll always take that with me.
So can you tell us a little bit about this character and why was it so uncomfortable for you?
Yeah, the character was... it was actually a pedophile, and it was very, very, very uncomfortable for me, and, because of the whole moral and the whole society's view on pedophiles in general, but the way that the storyline kind of went, it was actually a romantic comedy, is what it was. And he was a karate and motivational speaker. He's a karate instructor and motivational speaker. And, when you watch the movie, you'll get to, like him, get to know him, and, he's a pretty cool guy. And then all of a sudden, I'm not going to give too much away, but the script changes quite abruptly.
I have to tell you that for me, because I don't know if too many people are familiar, the 48 Film Festival, explain the rules for a 48-hour film festival entry. Could you explain to us what the rules are for being able to submit a film into the 48-hour film festival?
Well, it had to be done by 6 p.m. on Sunday, which is the last day, mostly that's when, you do all your editing and everything. It had to have a couple of requirements, or at least this one did, where it had to have a Keller or Kelly or Kelsey Goodington as one of the characters in there. Had to have a prop of a trash can being used within the film. And it had to have a line that says, "You can tell me. Come on, you can tell me." So all three of those things had to be in the film, and films that were submitted after the 6 o'clock deadline on Sunday were not eligible for being considered for either winning the film festival or even it was actually just an entry at that point. So they were very strict about when you needed to turn again.
Right. So for our listeners, think about the fact that you're going into this where you don't even know what your genre is going to be. There's certain props that have to be in there, certain lines, certain words. So then from there, as soon as you get that, you have to create a script, you have to film it, you have to edit it, and you have to have it submitted by a certain time. So for you as an actor, how stressful was it to, because, I mean, you kind, I know as a director, maybe they kind of have an idea of what they want the film to be, but still, as an actor, to create a character with the facets that your character had in such a short time, what were some of the things that had to happen for you to be able to do that?
I just had to let it go, which I, through the whole process, I was really uncomfortable with it. But then towards the end, I was just like, you know what, I'm just going to let this go and let this develop on its own. A lot of times throughout the whole filming, I was told, just go with the flow, Adam, just go with the flow. And slowly I did, and you know, towards the end of it, I just felt like, okay, I was able to get through it. And,
I have to be honest, I watched it, and I went from, this guy's awesome, I would love for him to come to my house for dinner and meet my family, to, are you freaking kidding me, to, I will kick his ass. Damn, that poor bastard, he just, wow. You know, it's like,
yeah,
this whole,
oh, yeah,
range of emotions that went through to me, and I'm, you know, this is someone that's in the industry as well. And the fact that people don't realize, this is 7 freaking minutes. You have 7 minutes to get this whole message across and to create this character. So for me personally, watching it, it's just a whole range of emotions. Now, you said you had some training as an actor. What do you think are some of the training that you got that prepared you for this role?
Well, definitely I had to employ my, I did take an improv class. I definitely had to employ a lot of improv because it was just go with it. And it was a very, these are the emotions that they want you to portray. So I kind of, I will give props to the director with really supporting me and exactly what he wanted my character to, what he wanted to be delivered. And so basically, you know, we just gave me an example, because he's an actor too. The director was an actor too, so he knows what I am going through. He's actually done a role, not as bad as that, but he has done a villain-related role. So that really, really, really helped.
Now, the funny thing, too, with you as an actor, and again, this is something that I've always said in film, that sometimes what you don't do on film or what you don't say or what you don't see is creepier than what you do, because I know that you see these slasher movies where there's, like, blood oozing everywhere, and you're like, eh, you know, whatever. It's overdone. Where the reason Hitchcock, you know, Alfred Hitchcock was so effective, I mean, look at Psycho, it's the fact that it's what I didn't see that would give me nightmares at night, because, you know, the imagination kind of goes. So in this particular film, your character really didn't do anything bad. So you had to create that whole scenario. And a lot of it, I noticed, had to do with your facial expressions, because there were times that you were in a situation that, I don't know, it's like it was a very serious situation, but you still had this likable look on your face, and you kind of had this like, no, it's a mistake, I'm innocent. How do you manage to pull that off? Because those are the little nuances that, you know, they're just so difficult to be able to manipulate, and yet you managed to do that.
And also the guidance from the director. And, you know, I kind of just had to be in character. I could actually be there and actually feel those emotions. Somebody is interrogating me at that point. And so, you know, like I got caught red-handed going into the cookie jar type of thing. Oh, Mom caught me, you know.
I was
so,
a big old cookie jar, brother.
Exactly. Yeah, it was pretty, pretty big, yeah, but,
your hand
you know,
all the way to your shoulder in that cookie jar, boy. But, you know, it's just, I think it's fascinating to me when I see an actor, especially someone like you that has just recently started doing it and then gets a, this is a meaty role. I mean, it is a seven-minute role, but you're front and center, and you are creating these wide dynamics of emotions. So it's nice to be able to see that full range coming from you, and just to be able to sit there and go, wow, this is really good, and to be able to breathe life into something. And again, it's something that it wasn't a project where you had months to rehearse or to memorize lines, or one of the things you talked about, improv. Knowing you and how opposite you are from anything to do with pedophilia or as a pedophile, how do you improv something like that to be able to come across believable across the screen?
That's a really good question. I know, I just, it had a lot to do with just letting go. And honestly, I was fighting it through the whole film thing, and then when I finally, when the director finally gave me the film, I was just like, I did that, because I was just kind of just, I didn't really think too much exactly what he had asked me to do. He said, don't think, just do, throughout the whole thing, and so
that's,
I just followed
true.
That, and just, you know, he was very, very specific as what he wanted to portray.
Right.
And I just hope that I get it and rose to the occasion of that to portray that. And when I saw that the first time, I was just like, wow, okay, I got a product here. This is good.
That's very true, because I've noticed that one of the things that I've seen now when you get into the acting industry is that you, when you are acting, I've noticed major name stars, I'm talking like big name stars, where you're sitting there and all of a sudden you realize, wait a minute, this person is like searching for something, kind of like, I don't even know if they're searching for their lines or what they're looking for, but there's just this thing that goes on where you see them where they're looking to the left or they're looking to the right. And I'm talking about in very intense moments where, you know, you should actually be looking at the person or that kind of thing, and it really goes to show that in your case, I didn't even see that. You didn't do that blinking. You were, like, looking them straight on, and it was just, it was an amazing work of art that I got to see from you, especially when you kept telling me that you haven't been in it that long. Now, I have to switch over, because not only are you a talented actor, and you just blew my mind on that 7 minutes that I saw that, but for those of you that don't know, the Sarah Joy Foundation is having their inaugural road race, September 15th, in Media, Pennsylvania. I just announced it a little while ago. And one of the things that we wanted to do was to get the public involved was, so we had a T-shirt contest, and the contest was to design the T-shirt for the road race. And we got some really kick-ass entrance, but we got one design in particular that we fell in love with because it just encompassed a lot of what the foundation is about. And I'm putting the link up in the chat room for you guys. If you want to swing by the Sarah Joy Foundation, you're more than welcome to like the page and check out Adam. So Adam had the winning design. So Adam, I want to ask you, because one of the things that I like is that our Sarah Arahita, who we started this foundation after she passed away March of 2012 from breast cancer, who she fought valiantly for 2.5 years. She really hung in there. Well, one of her favorite things was cherry blossoms. Absolutely loved them. And as ironic as it might seem, pink had always been her favorite color. I mean, the reason I wear pink is because of her. I've never liked pink. I thought it was a little bit too girly. But she kind of got me into it. So, Adam, if people can take a look and go to the website, your design just spoke to us as a whole. Can you tell me a little bit about what was going through your mind when you came up with this concept? You put our logo in there and the other components that you put into the T-shirt design.
Sure. When I was thinking about it was, this is also a personal thing with me as well. Everybody knows somebody who's been affected by this.
Absolutely.
So I thought that symbolism was absolutely critical in this, in the actual design. And I'm actually going by the symbolism document that I sent to you with the submission, symbolizing the flowers, the use of the branch, and the use of the runner, and what each item meant. And also the thought of the, you know, why use a script font. Those decisions actually just came immediately because I went onto the website, looked at how that was put together, and, you know, I wanted a design that would take what that the meaning from the website and the items that were on it into this design. And then I actually added the runner, which is almost like in the design itself, because that symbolized the journey of the foundation. It's still, even though Sarah has left us, she is still here.
Right.
And so it's a whole theme of never stop running, walking, keep fighting. The bonds, strengthen people, resolve to keep going. That was absolutely key in this. And so the actual flowers actually symbolize the people who are involved with the Sarah Joy Foundation one way or another. Either they're affected or they know people are affected. And so that runner in the design in the middle of it kind of connected the whole thing together. And the flowers symbolized the individual people, the people, like I said, the many souls who joined the cause, whether they've been affected or not. And most important is a bond is formed between the participants of the foundation, and through this run, a bond will be formed. I thought that was very, very important.
Right, and that was the whole thing that got to us, is the fact that it just touched us so much. Even to the funny thing is, people don't realize it, because unless you knew Sarah personally, she had that little quirky thing, you know, how you have the ribbon symbolizes a woman, and she's running. It's really incredible to us. Like, it sends shivers down my spine, because the way the arm is laid out is literally how she looked when she ran. And that's why it's funny to us that it just touched us so much. So for our listeners, if you haven't had a chance, please go to our Facebook page, Sarah's Joy Foundation, and you will be able to see Adam's winning design on there that is being made into T-shirts that will be given out to the runners, the registered runners, on September 15th. And also the T-shirts will be for sale on our website within the next few weeks. Just to let all our listeners know, at this point, the Sarah Joy Foundation became a 503c, which means we are a nonprofit status foundation. All donations are tax deductible. We got our official 503c status on September 11th of 2012, which for us was very symbolic, because we were able to take a day that is shadowed with sadness, and something good came out of it for us as a family, and that was the creation of the Sarah Joy Foundation. And to date, we have raised close to $8,000, and that's just basically a little army of six people. Word of mouth, we've had two fundraisers. The first one we had was March of this year. We had a fundraiser event. We had raffles and gift baskets and all that, and that raised $5,000. And just this past Saturday, the most amazing couple, Amy and Jeffrey Lake of Massachusetts, decided to do a fundraiser in conjunction with the Spartan Run. This past Saturday, the Spartan Run is really for people that are nuts. because you have to be crazy to do this. You're running, you're in mud, you're doing obstacles. So, yeah, this crazy lady did it with my husband, and he got a team together. And at the end of it, they did it as a fundraiser. They raised over $1,700. So for us to be able to raise this money and then turn around, and we have given over 3,000 of it away already to deserving families. Because what a lot of people don't realize, and Adam, you know this, because like you said, everybody's been touched by someone with cancer. When a loved one passes away from an illness or from anything, the family is stuck with the bills. The medical bills do not go away. The doctors do not say, oh, well, you know, we weren't able to save your loved one, so we'll just null and void your bills. It doesn't work that way. So when Sarah passed away, my son was left with close to $60,000, $70,000 worth of medical expenses that were not covered by health insurance. Because as much as health insurance covers, if you're lucky to have a good plan, there's still a ton of things that are not covered. So originally we did start that as a way of raising funds to help him pay some of the bills. But then he decided that instead of doing that, he wanted to pay it forward. So we were able to give $2,000 to a lady whose mom passed away, and the bill collectors were harassing her for her mom's bills. So she was able to pay off a little bit of the bills with the money we gave her, and we also did that for another family. So we're hoping that after this road race that we're having on the September 15th, which Adam just created this amazing T-shirt design for us, that we'll be able to help another family. And as of this point, I think probably we're taking less than 2% for administrative costs, which is just to pay for the website and for the maintaining of the email accounts that are associated with the Sarah Joy Foundation. Everything else has been donated to us, either by family, my son, myself, my husband. So we're hoping to be able to continue to do that, where we want to have as much as is donated turned around and gone back to the families that really need this. So that's where we're going with this. And Adam, I am just over the moon with happiness at how beautiful you created this design. So for our listeners that are there, do you want to give them some links or websites that they can go check out your work if they're interested in hiring you to create some wonderful magic for them as well?
Sure. You can go to my Facebook page, Adam Dawes Online. And that's, you can just look it up, Adam Dawes Online. And that'll have a link to my portfolios, both graphic design and instructional design. And I'm also on LinkedIn as well. You can look me up, Adam Dawes, through that. And my portal, about.me/ACD1135, has a link to all of my work, both on the acting side and on the graphic design side. Please connect.
So do you have any projects upcoming that we should look out for? Anything good you're going to be working on?
Well, I may be putting together some other modules. As of right now, I don't nothing right now, but that's why I'm definitely open to my next opportunity. So
if someone needs to reach you, the best way to get a hold of you would be through your website?
Through either the Facebook or the acd1135@gmail.com. That's my email, goes right to my phone, and that's the best way to get a hold of me is through email.
Well, I am so glad that you were able to come and be on the show with us. I'm really excited to have you as my first guest back, as I've been off the air for a while, as I said, with moving and getting everything ready with the foundation. And luckily, Shelly Karma Numsharks has been holding the fort down for me. So you listeners, don't forget to listen to her show tomorrow right at this spot from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. She's going to have some real amazing guests. And on Sundays from 12 to 2, also Eastern Standard Time, and she's going to have some amazing guests there as well. Adam, thank you so much for being on the show. And for our listeners, all of his links are in our chat room. So if you haven't logged into our chat room, please do so. If not, you can go to our segment page where Adam's picture is, and all his information is on there. Or you can look him up on Facebook and hit him up. Adam, thank you so much for being with us, and thank you so much for having the award-winning design. And we're just so grateful that you were able to be with us.
Thank you very much for having me on your show. It's been an honor. Thank you so much.
So, Adam, is there anybody you'd like to have a shout-out to, anybody you want to say hi to before you leave us?
Sure. Mom, Dad, Liz, Nick. I know Liz and Nick are traveling. My girl, Kim, I love you. And shout-out to Zach, yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Adam. You have a great night, and we hope we get to have you on the show some other time as well to show some more of your amazing work.
Absolutely. Would love the opportunity. Thank you so much.
All right, Adam. Have a good night.
You too.
So just to say the fact that we have so much talent in the New England area. I mean, I have been blown away by some of the talent that I've come across on this show, and you guys need to support that talent. So remember, look him up, Adam Dawes. He's on Facebook. The links are in the page, in the chat room, and if not, just look him up on Facebook, Adam Dawes Online on Facebook, or you can go to Sarah Joy Foundation, and you will find his information there as well, as he was the winning designer, Sarah Joy Foundation, inaugural road race t-shirt contest that we had, and we were just blown away with his design. How about we take a little music break? This lady just knows how to rock the world. I really like this. It's very inspirational to me. It's called Whatever It Takes, and it's Laquandra Seymour, and I hope you enjoy it.
Whatever it takes, I'ma do what I gotta do just to get. This is LaQuandra. And I am.
Whatever it takes, I'ma give to your head that the gypsy away.
Whatever it takes, because I stick to my goals and my dreams. And I thank God for everything.
Whatever it takes, I'ma tell you that you're wishing the light and good.
And I thank God for everything.
And we are back, and that was Whatever It Takes by LaQuandra Seymour. So just to update you guys, we have some exciting, exciting news. We just got notified that our show, Diamond in the Rough, Ordinary Woman, with me, Charlie Alejandro, and the dynamic, Shelly Carmen Nunchucks, is now featured. Yay us! That means that when you log on to the website, you get to see our mugs up front there, and we become a suggested show. So we are growing in leaps and bounds, and we owe all of that to you guys who have continued to faithfully listen to us and log in and be there for us, and we could not do any of this without you guys, and we greatly appreciate it so much. I'd like to share one more song, and this is called Are You Prepared? I guess it's kind of something that I need to tell myself to remind myself that I need to be prepared, because in life, we might be dreaming for things, wishing for things, but if we're not ready for it when it comes, guess what? That's a missed opportunity, and we no longer have that. Just remember that no matter how much you brainwave something or pray for it, we also have to be prepared to accept it when it does come, and sometimes we never know when that's going to come. So here for your enjoyment is Are You Prepared by Silent Bravery.
I'm all in. When I go all out, you put in is what you're bound to get out of nowhere. Here come that rushing in doubt. Are you prepared to ride this one out?
Are you prepared to fight?
Target in sight, you're nearly there, but then you want to give up in the air. Well, one ends up, we all know almost is not enough.
Are you prepared to fight? What a shame to spend your days wondering what you could have been if you changed, and you know that you could if you had another chance today. Would you be ready?
Are you prepared to fight for it? Will you?
And that was Are You Prepared by Silent Bravery. So as I was talking earlier, we are in August, as you all know, and summer is winding down. Sadly, summer is such my favorite time of year. But anyway, just to remind you guys, look, there is a lot of people that are going to be in need this holiday season. I know you're mad at me. You're like, oh, stop talking about Christmas and snow and cold. But you know what? Toys for Tots has always been an organization dear to my heart. So if you guys have the opportunity, $5, little toy unwrapped, maybe you guys want to start collecting them now and contact your local Toys for Tots Foundation. That is our foundation that we like to help out every year. One year that was particularly wonderful for me was my sons and I got to actually work the Toys for Tots site literally the day before Christmas and on Christmas Eve. Talk about putting your life into perspective. To have these people come in there with their little ones and be able to have a gift for the kids under the Christmas tree for Christmas Day, it was such a heartwarming feeling, and it made us realize how lucky and how blessed we were. So I suggest that contact your local chapter of Toys for Tots and see what you can do to help out. If you don't have money to help out, you got two healthy feet and two healthy hands, they will take it. They always need help in the warehouses or the distribution points or any of those areas. So please, don't be shy. Make sure you go out there and you help out as much as you can. So our next guest is someone that I am very excited to have on our show. We had him on our show a couple of years ago, and he is long overdue. Clarence Poynter, also known as Pencilman, and very adequate nickname, I might add. Such an incredible talent. So we're going to bring him on and have him tell us a little bit about himself. Hey, Clarence, is that you?
Hey. Yes, Charlie, how are you?
Well, good evening, Clarence. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Oh, no problem.
I have to tell you, I've known about you and seen your work for at least 3 years, and every time you come up with a new piece, I am just more blown away than I was the time before. Your talent has just motivated me because I was that chronic doodler. You always knew where I sat because there'd be a bunch of, you know, sketching and doodles and stuff, and to me, that's it. They were doodles. And I always said, well, you know, I never went to art school and I never had a chance to develop my talent. It wasn't encouraged. Man, my man Clarence here just pushed all those excuses out of the water when I found out about you and you told us your story. So getting to it, so Clarence, you were born in Hillsboro, Alabama?
Yep, little small town, no red lights.
Oh, man, I can't even imagine. So what was it like growing up in a tiny town like that?
You know, it's cool. It's you know everybody. You know, everybody knows you. Your parents, everybody. You know, it's just a, you know, like Mayberry, USA.
That's awesome. So what did you do? What were some of the things that you did in life when you were younger, before you went down this path of becoming this amazing artist?
Well, I had the normal life of anyone else, you know, kick cans, roll tires, play basketball, you know, had insect collections and all kinds of stuff for biology, and just a record kid, you know, enjoy life and joked a lot, had fun, and still the same today as I was back then. No change. Just a little older and better looking.
So what exactly piqued your interest in art?
You know, I would just say it was just there, you know, and
mm-hmm.
I can't really explain it. It's just when you have a knack or something and you're doing it all the time, obviously it's a gift that God gave you, so you gotta just keep on with it and see where it leads you.
Well, see, it's funny because I hear that, we all hear that term a lot. Oh, he's got this God-gifted talent. He's got this God-gifted talent. And we hear that, but in your case, it's evident. I mean, some of us, more than others, have to go digging for our God-given talent. I mean, God has given everybody talents, but me, in my case, I'm like, all right, let me go dig because I don't know where he wrapped this sucker because I can't find it. I got to go digging. Whereas in your case, it was kind of like just there. And for me, like, I've seen all the artwork that you have up on your web page and on your my Facebook page. So for our listeners, you can go check him out. He's on Facebook. Clarence Pencilman Pointer, and he also has his website where you see some of his amazing artwork, and that is on, oh, where's your website? I thought I had it on here. Clarence Pointer,
Clarence,
right?
Pointer. Yep.
ClarencePointer.com. You guys got to go check it out, the amazing artwork. And not to jump ahead, but Clarence has done some really incredible work, but for me, as a not-so artist, because I love art. I mean, I love art. Don't get me wrong. I love it. Absolutely love it. My hands always have to have a pencil in it, doing some crazy doodle sketch or whatever. I don't literally practice it like I should, but there's just something natural about having a pencil in my hand and doodling. But
yeah.
I have to tell you that to see the progression, because, I mean, obviously when I saw your artwork, it was what I call finished products, because you had been an artist for over 20 years at this point. So I'm thinking that you always did it that way. But when I got to see some of your older work, you just see this amazing, incredible growth that most people would erroneously think it was due to going to art school or some kind of teaching. But explain to us how exactly you developed your talents and made them progress so much.
Well, I'd say probably about 7-8 years old. So I've been doing about 40 years, not 20 years. and
right.
I went to CP University. I really did, you know, and CP University is Clarence Pointer University. That's me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get myself... I tell people I get my.
I love that. I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt. That's hysterical.
That's okay. I always tell people I gave myself 3 PhDs in art to myself. You know, and I guess the progression is just practice. You know, and staying focused and a passion for what I do. It's not a sacrifice. That's not even in the equation. You know, people ask me all the time, you must have a lot of sacrifices and things of that nature. I always say, sacrifice is not in the equation. You know,
mm-hmm.
if you have a passion to develop a gift that God gave you, the passion supersedes sacrifice. You know, and, you know, it's and being able to listen to people that are as good or greater artists than you are. And it's kind of hard to find those individuals now, but along
mm-hmm.
the way, I've had people, you know, whisper things in my ear, you know, that I took heed to and I applied. Like, for instance, one guy told me to draw exactly what I see, not what I think I see.
See, that's really deep for me. Not to interrupt you right there, but
No. That's
really deep because to draw what you see, not what you think you see, that, like, I would sit there for days having that go around in my head because it's such a deep concept.
It is. But when you said it, I grabbed
mm-hmm.
it. I was like, I pulled out the Allen Iverson drawing I had done. I thought it was a bomb. I thought it was good. This was like 2
mm-hmm.
years ago. And once you said, emphasize your dark areas and your light areas, I mean, every nick and cranny of the braids, or the wrinkle around the eye, eyelash,
mm-hmm.
tip of the nose, light spots, inside the ear, I mean, every little thing I could possibly see, I pulled it out and I enhanced it. And it went from, I would say, I thought it was a 10 initially, but it really wasn't. It was, I would say, on a scale of 10, it might have been a 7.5. Once I finished enhancing it, it was off the charts.
Right.
And so being able to listen to people and not think you know everything, it's a plus. I feel like I could feel on Facebook as far as mentoring people and giving advice and suggestions and stuff. And people ask me all the time, why do I share my secrets? And I say, well, there is no secrets. I said, either you know what to do or you don't know what to do. You know?
And, you know, that's so funny because what you're saying is it goes back to when we talk about a God-given talent, and it goes back to how some people say you're either born with the talent or you're not. And the reality is that what you personally were born with and what you have done to create that into a bigger art form is huge, because you could have not mm-hmm. practiced much, not taken all this counsel
right.
that was given to you, and your drawings would have been very nice, but rudimentary kind of thing, not to the point that I have to share this story with you and to our listeners. I remember the first time Clarence was going to be on our show, and my husband's funny. He's like, who is this pencilman that's on my webpage? He's like, why does he keep popping up on my Facebook feed? I'm like, oh, because he's a friend of mine. He goes, yeah, but he's always got these photographs of people. What is he, a photographer? I started laughing. I'm like, babe, those are drawings. He's like, get out of here. There's no way those are drawings. And here's my husband, who has perfect 20/20 vision with his nose up to the screen going, there is no way that is a drawing. No way. And then it was funny. It's almost like you heard him, because I remember a couple of days later, you had a drawing that you had done, and you had the photograph side by side. And my husband's like, are you kidding me? The drawing looks better than the photograph that was put up there. And he was just amazed with your talent and your artwork. And that's what it goes back to what you were saying, that you continue to perfect it. But I have a question for you. How do you go from a town with no red light, like you just said, to being commissioned to create a drawing of Rosa Parks for a special event presentation at Edwards Air Force Base in 93? How do you go from there to that?
Well, I was driving on the freeway back in 1984. And
mm-hmm.
I drove by the Air Force recruiter's office, and I was like, oh, you know what? It's time to get out of this small town. I always come back and visit. I want to see some of the world. So the Air Force took me away to Japan, back to California, where they had a Black History Month program. Rosa Parks was coming in the town.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew she was coming. So I said, I'm going to do a portrait of Rosa Parks in some kind of way. I'm going to get this to her. So a week leading up to the event, I get a phone call from some of the big wigs in town, some of the Negro College Councils and Black Heritage Committees type individuals. They called me up and asked me, what do a portrait of Rosa Parks? Now, at this time, I was practically done.
Rewind. So here you are, and this is something funny, because my listeners that know me and listen to me all the time, they know I'm a big proponent of the secret. People think I wrote the book, or that, you know, Rhonda Burns and I are best friends and she pays me, because I'm always talking about it, because it's in, you know, that brainwave. So here you are, you're like, okay, this is what I want to do. So you went ahead
mm-hmm.
and made this amazing drawing of this woman. And
yep.
magically, out of the cosmos, someone calls you and goes, hey, by the way, do you think you could do a drawing of Rosa Parks? And you're like, brother, I got you. Let me go dig it up.
Yep.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Like, it just blows my mind.
I didn't tell them I was, when they asked me to do it, I kind of, you know, being a shrewd business person, even back then, I was like, you know, I'm really busy at work. I'm not sure if I'm going to have time to do it or not. And so we'll compensate you an X amount of dollars. And I said, well, I think I can squeeze it in. And so that night, I basically finished. I was almost practically done when they asked me to do it. And
that's insane.
I
mean, it's funny because I mean, I've had things happen to me like that, but when I hear it in that case, like it's like, you know, the little hairs stand up because it's so amazing how that happens and how it works.
It
that here you are, you brainwaved it. And I'm talking, you're not brainwaving a parking spot in front of the bank because you're too lazy to walk. You're brainwaving giving one of your drawings to Rosa Parks, who I happen to absolutely love this woman for what she did and what she stood for. And the fact that she was so humble about it, I remember listening to a talk she gave, and she's like, oh, honey, I was just tired. I didn't want to get up.
You know? It's a sweetheart. I mean, I don't think anything would top that occurrence in my memory bank of art.
Well, I don't know, because I'm looking at your bio here, and for our listeners that might not be familiar with it. So, okay, so you got to do that for Rosa Parks. Then you got invited to showcase your masterpieces at the Motown legend Smokey Robinson's first annual celebrity golf tournament in 2005. That, again, you know, were you brainwaving that too?
let me tell you how that happened. Okay. I was out of work. I heard a commercial on radio station that he was having a celebrity golf tournament. And I had just finished a Tiger Woods drawing. It was like 6-7 years ago, I think. And I get home. I get on the computer. I pull up the radio station. I try to get through. I couldn't get through. I kept trying. I finally get through. And I made contact with someone that gave me a number to the event coordinator. So I called her. Now, this is back when I didn't have a website. I had my photos on Yahoo photos.
Mm-hmm.
And she wanted to meet with me to see more artwork. But Murphy's Law came into effect. Everything that could happen wrong did, up until the Friday before the Sunday. And we never met. I said, well, I have some photos on Yahoo. She said, well, give me the link. I sent her the link. She went to the link and was like, how soon can you be here Sunday morning? Now, this is the kicker. The booth, the vendor booths were $500 a piece. When I got there, they had three booths for me at no charge.
What?
No charge. Yeah, no charge.
Man, I am hanging out with you in your brainwaves. but not to take away from the secret or anything, but the point is that one of the things that I was just talking about before you came on, I was playing this song called Are You Prepared by the, you know, Silent Bravery. And one of the things it says is that no matter how much you pray or you brainwave something, you have to be ready for it. And the other thing is that you have to have inspired action. So here you are, you heard this, you know, radio commercial, and you could have just sat back and said, oh man, that'd be so cool to do that. But you took the action. You kept going through figuring it out, and you didn't stop until you got there, and that's the whole point of this.
Right. I tell people, I said, you got to stay persistent. I don't care how many doors you knock on and they close in your face. You got to keep on opening, keep on knocking until one opens in your favor. You know, it's just like the event that I just had in Beverly Hills. Now, I had an art exhibit in a nice area of California in February. Now, this is the truth.
Right.
I said my next art exhibit is going to be in Beverly Hills. I said that back in February. Now, I didn't know how, where, or when, but I did know this. A venue on Rodale Drive will cost an arm and a leg. Then you got to have catering service to feed the people. And then you got to be concerned about people coming. Now, fast forward to last month. I got a call early in the month about participating in this event at the Beverly Hills Country Club. Now, there was no cost for me to go to showcase my artwork. The the food's all being prepared for the venue. Mackenzie Mall Warner was the marquee person that night from the coffee show. And the people were already coming. So I didn't have to worry about the people coming, the food, or the venue. Just show
that
up.
That is insane. That is like,
I know.
I mean, again, and the point is at this point, I don't even know. Wait a minute. How did you wind up from Hillsboro in L.A.?
The Air Force. When my dad was in the military, I stayed in California. My dad was in the military in 1994. That meant for a while.
Okay.
But
Uncle Sam kind of got you up.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like...
Props to Uncle Sam on that one.
My goal was to go back home in 1994. And I got a graphics illustrator job. And that's kind of sustained things for about a year. I had a regular 9-to-5 job that sustained for like 12 years. And then, but all along those times, raising a family, being a husband, working a 9-to-5 job, my art still took precedence over a lot of stuff that was going on. I took time to practice through all that. So when people tell me, oh, life's getting away, I don't have time, you know, this, that, and the other, hogwash. I say hogwash. Because if I did it, anybody can do it. You know, if you really want it.
Now you know. Well, it's funny because I remember when we had our first interview a couple of years back where you said that, boy, did that stick in my mind. It really did because it was one of the things that we as humans, we do make that excuse. And it really hit me like a ton of bricks when you said that if you really want it bad enough, you can make it happen. Even to the point that one of my pastimes is I like to create gowns, like hand sewn, you know, with sewing machine. And I remember when an idea would come for a gown, I would sketch it, and it literally looked like a 2-year-old drew it because I'm like, yeah, you know, it doesn't have to be all fancy, just so I personally remember it. And I remember after we had that conversation, me looking at my sketchbook, and I'm like, really? What the heck is that? And I remember going back over my designs and redoing them where now there's, like, definition. It doesn't look like, you know, a square. It actually looks like, you know, a female shape where the dresses and stuff. But it has carried over into other things in my life where I have asked myself, is this something that I really want? And it's funny because a couple months ago I heard a audio cassette or audio CD by Mike Dooley. And one of the things that hit me when I was reading your bio is Mike Dooley talks about in life, if we connect the dots, if we make dots, he says, you make dots, you do what you think you need to do. Once you brainwave what you want and you know what your goal is, don't worry about how you're going to get there. He's like, make these dots. Just do things that you think are going to get you there. He's like, and then the universe will connect the dots when you least expect it. And I'm looking at your bio, and it's like, man, did you connect dots? Because here you are, you're going from this tiny little town that you talk about. You went into the Air Force. You wind up doing this amazing drawing for Rosa Parks for our listeners. You got to go check it out. He's got it on Facebook, and he's got it at Clarence Pointer. And it just blows your mind. And then on top of that, then you had the exhibit at the first annual Celebrity Golf Tournament. But then you didn't stop there. You were hand-selected to create an image of Ambassador Andrew Young for the It Takes a Village Foundation in Las Vegas. In 2013, this year, you were appointed a premier artist of the Dallas Cowboys. And not my favorite team, not really don't like them, but I'm excited that he's their premier artist because some of that work, wow. Too bad they didn't pick you for the Patriots because then I would have really been in heaven.
But I'm not biased.
The other thing is here, not to interrupt you, it says here that you were selected as the sole artist to create masterful drawings for the new Oscar Cunningham African American Sports Museum in Vegas. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, I had done, I'm one of those guys, the one thing the military, not program, but they prepare you for, I guess is a better word, is for you to stay up on your current events. So, and if I know something's going to be hot, I get on it before it gets hot. Like the Jackie Robinson movie that came out. I knew the movie was coming out. It was on my to-do list for a long time. So the day the movie was released, I was done with my image of Jackie Robinson sliding into home plate. So,
oh my gosh, that's crazy. I love that.
Yeah. I post on Facebook, and I get this inbox message from this lady named Patricia Cunningham, and she's jabbering about something. It sounded good. I said, well, I'll call you.
Mm-hmm.
So we paid phone tag for a little bit. When we finally hooked up, she was like, I found you. I said, you found me? She said, yeah.
I was like, wait, I didn't know I was lost.
You know? I said, you've been looking for me? She said, I haven't been looking for you particularly, but when I saw your artwork, I said, you're the guy I need. I was like, for what? And she wanted to tell me her dad, Oscar Cunningham, was allegedly one of the first African-American NCAA basketball coach.
Oh,
yeah,
my gosh,
yeah.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, the head coach got ill, and he took over, I think, two or three games at the end of the season. So they're looking for the archives to validate everything. But long story short, she's spearheading this new African-American sports museum in Las Vegas in his honor. And she wants me to create, I think, like 10 or I think 10 Hall of Fame inductees renderings to be unveiled at the grand opening of the museum the first part of the year.
Oh, my gosh. That is amazing. I have to tell you, though, you have done some incredible pieces, and I'm biased. I have to tell you, the Tuscany Airmen, absolutely, hands down, is my absolute favorite. And the reason, on top of the fact that I've always been fascinated with them, 2 years ago, I was in a beauty pageant, and I don't know why I won. But one of the appearances that we had to do was at the New York City Veterans Day Parade, and the Tuscany Airmen were the guests of honor that year. So we got to actually see some of them that were still alive, and Cuba Gooden was the marshal that year.
Okay.
Man, the rendering you did on that, oh, gosh, the detail, the planes, they're, you know, in there. Standing at attention and formation, and then the individual faces that you put in there. Can you please tell me a little bit about what the inspiration was for you? And because honestly, like I said, all your drawings are so good, but there's just something so special about that one that I can't, it just comes alive for me.
Well, each of my drawings have a story behind all of them. That was on my to-do list for eons after I actually found out about the figure. Because Gorman School in the South, my school, only thing we ever heard about was Benjamin O. Davis. He was a general in World War II. That's all I really
knew.
I didn't know any of the significance of Red Tails or Tuskegee Airmen. There's one paragraph in our history book about that. So, you know, it was kind of nothing to I know what we really thought about until I was in my 30s, I guess, probably, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I find out more about the Red Tails and Tuskegee Airmen. I've met a few of them in person. But this drawing, like I said, God put these visions in my head on about the current event thing. Like the same thing, when the movie came out, I was done with that drawing the day the movie came out. I was completely, and I had did research. I had about 20 pictures I was going to use to create the collage that you see. And
oh my gosh, that's amazing!
I
it really is.
Down. Yeah, I knew I wanted the airplane in the drawing. I wanted Benjamin Davis. That's on the left side of the drawing. Like other two images, I didn't know what I wanted to how I wanted to incorporate. And this friend of mine sent me the one, a photograph of the Gaston Formation. I said, okay, I can put that in there. And then I pulled the one with the guys where they were sitting around, like they're having a meeting. So I incorporate that in there. But I wanted to do it, you know, in a way that it would flow, opposed to looking cluttered and stacked on top of each other. That's the key. My collage had to flow properly. So, long story short, I finished. I had a special at one time when it first came out, and they were $100 a piece. The lithograph.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this lady in Alabama. I never met before. She called me up, and she wanted to buy one. So she bought
mm-hmm.
one. I gave her one for free. I love getting the stuff for free, phones by and stuff like that. So she gets it. And she shared it with her father. And
oh my goodness!
Yeah, I don't mention names because he don't want his name to be broadcast. But he got it. He was like, "Who in the world did this?" It's my friend
mm-hmm.
in California. And he was like, "This belongs in the museum." So
oh my goodness!
Traveler.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He's a world traveler. He calls the curator at the museum, and sent him a JPEG of it, and the guy at the museum said the same thing. And who in the heck is this guy? I think they use a different language, but for radio, we'll keep that.
I know, right?
You know,
PG-13
and,
people.
You know, so he said, "You think he would send me one so I could showcase it in the museum?" And
mm-hmm.
They contact me. I said, absolutely. But I send them a copy. They frame it really nice. And they frame it and they put it in the museum. So now it's officially a part of the African-American Horse Museum in Las Vegas. I'm sorry, in Alabama.
It has to be. It has to be because, like
yeah.
I said, you've done such amazing. Even the recent one you did with Jackie Robinson is close to my heart, and I loved it. It was funny too because my son, who's one of my boys, he's not an actor, but he's a baseball player, and he actually got invited to go down to Atlanta, Georgia, to audition for the movie when they were because they were looking for baseball
really?
Players and stuff. So yeah, it was a great experience for him, but. He didn't get picked because the guy kept saying to him, he's like, oh, man, I want to pick you because you're so good at baseball and stuff. He's like, but you're just too young and too short looking for what they were looking for in the movie. But the rendering that you did of you know, Jackie coming in as your home plate, it's amazing. But the Tuscany Airmen, and I think for me personally, because I was very blessed at the schools that I went to. I didn't live in the greatest neighborhood, but the history teacher that I had, I loved him because he didn't mince words, he just told us like it was. And so I was blessed that in 7th and 8th grade, I knew about the Red Tails. I knew about what they had done. I knew about their success missions and stuff. So we very rarely went off the quote-unquote official history books. He told us the real history, sort of
yeah.
say. So
yeah,
when I saw it, your rendering of it, oh, man, it just comes to life so much. It's amazing.
I enjoyed it.
I have a quick question. Now, you've actually had some of your artwork featured on TV shows as well?
Yeah, I've had, so for me, people ask me, how'd you do this, how'd you do that? Well, I stay prepared. And it's, I got to have a knack for being in the right place at the right time. And
you got that cornered. Especially when I'm looking
I,
on your, if you go to your Facebook and I see you there with, you know, the picture of you and Rosa Parks, and wow, it's like definitely you have a knack for being right place, right time.
Yeah, it's about being prepared too, though,
mm-hmm.
and knowing how to present yourself and all that. It's a huge body of work. And with the sitcoms on TV, the person who was instrumental in that happening was the actress Kim Whitley.
Mm-hmm.
We have a mutual cousin, so we claim each other as cousins. And she was
mm-hmm.
on a TV show called Sparks back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
that was a spinoff. It wasn't a spinoff. Uncle Phil from the Fresh Prince was on the show. Terrence Howard with Robin Gibbons and
yes.
Ken Willis.
Mm-hmm.
And another guy, I think of his name right now. She let me know that they were looking for art for the show. So I drove down,
mm-hmm.
met the set director and showed off some stuff, and they picked some pieces out. And the same thing with Hangry Mr. Cooper. I actually got a chance to see my drawing on the classroom wall. I was watching the show. He was teaching class and on the show. I saw my Nelson Mandela on the back wall of the class.
Wow, that's incredible. That is,
you know,
so incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Clarence, I'm telling you, every time I talk to you, it just flies by, and I am just so honored that you actually came to our show. So for our listeners, if you want to see some of his amazing artwork or get more information on making one of these incredible masterpieces your own, www.clarencepointer.com, or you can find him on Facebook at Clarence Penciman Pointer as well, and he has some incredible artwork there. Clarence, thank you so much for being on our show. Is there anybody you'd like to give a shout out to, a hey, what's up to, before you go?
Everybody who supported me verbally and financially, all that. If I start calling names, I'm going to miss about 1,000 people, so I won't miss no names.
Oh, you don't want to get in trouble.
So yeah,
where can people check out your artwork in the coming months?
What was that again?
Where can people check out your artwork in the coming months?
I don't know. I'm a month-by-month guy. So I might be in Arizona in December. I might be in North Carolina in the next couple of months. I could be anywhere. I can see the state go to my fan page, which is the link to my website, or my fan page, or my record page on Facebook. Just try to keep up best you can, because I'm going to amend miles per hour. So try to keep up with me. That's all I can say.
All right. So you heard that, listeners. You have to go to Clarence Penciman Pointer Facebook fan page, or you can go to www.clarencepointer.com to keep up with this busy, talented, incredible man. Clarence, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show, and we're looking forward to having you back sometime real soon. Thank you so much for coming and hanging out with us this evening.
Absolutely. You take care, sweetie.
You too, hon. Have a great night.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Yes, guys, that was Clarence Pointer, an incredible artist, incredible talent. He's actually even done some works of the president, he has an incredible painting of Whitney Houston, by the way. I love it. She's like just chilling in heaven with a bunch of angels. You can't miss it. You got to go check that out. So to the next segment, before we bring our artist in, I have this song that I've been dying to hear. Just because I haven't listened to it in a while. Some of you know I do some acting on the side, and I'm currently working on a project called Falkir. You can get more information on Facebook for that. And this song is called The Battle Song. It's one of the actual opening songs that's going to be in this movie, and I just like it. It's just so inspirational. So I hope you enjoy this song. It's called Battle Song by The Pisces Project. And that was Battle Song by the Pisces Project. That is going to be featured in the upcoming movie Valkyr that should be out next year. Hopefully we'll be done by then. An amazing concept to the movie where most of the quote-unquote heroes are females and we're not spring chickens anymore. We're actually older women, and I just love it. It's a lot of action, a lot of visual things for you to see. So now we're going on to our final guest. It will be Irving, and we will have him come on right now.
Hello.
Good evening, Irving. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. It's so nice to finally get to have you on the show.
Good. Hello?
Well, yes, I'm here.
Sorry about that.
No problem. Nice to have you on the show. I guess the timing's kind of good because you just have a new project that came out. Hello? We got you. Okay, so, Irving, I want to ask you. I am here on your music page. You just came out with a mixtape. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
It's called Therapy Sessions.
Mm-hmm. And Therapy Sessions. Now, where did you come up with that name?
Well, my way of venting, I guess, releasing my anger and my issues usually comes through writing and going to the gym, basically. Those are my two ways of releasing stress.
Now, it's funny, just for our listeners, when you send me a little blurb on your bio, I thought it was really funny that you mentioned that you started writing in sixth grade and then you fell in love with it and then you found out that women like poetry. So there was a good side to it. So how did you actually get to start writing?
Let's see. Yeah, I really started in the fifth grade because I was writing short stories, and my
mm-hmm.
teacher started telling me that I was really good at writing.
Okay.
So from there on, for some whatever reason, I one day just started writing poetry, and I still remember the girl that came over to me and just looked over my shoulder and was like, "What is that?"
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, don't worry about it. Trying to make sure she didn't look at it because I thought it was like corny. Right? So she like grabbed the paper and sat down. I couldn't take it. I couldn't jump up and take it because teacher's looking right at you. So yeah, so she read it. Next thing I know, the girl likes me.
mm-hmm.
because of the poem, and I just went with it and just started writing like crazy at that point because I realized
that's
the talent.
So you like the writing, you like the poetry. How did you translate from poetry to music? How did you make the connection for that?
Let me think. It was probably my sophomore year or my freshman year in high school in Florida. I went to Savage
mm-hmm.
Creek High School. My friend Earl was sitting in class writing lyrics, and we used to sit down and just go back and forth, just like snapping on each other all the time, just saying stupid little jokes. And he would be rapping in his most of the time, and then I noticed that he was doing it, so I just said a funny line back that rhymed. Then
uh-huh.
it went back and forth through our entire class, like through that entire day of class. And then
mm-hmm.
at the end of it, he was like, "Why don't you try rapping? Because you're actually pretty good at putting all this stuff together." And
okay. Uh-huh.
From then on, I started rapping with him and my other boy, Alex.
Mm-hmm.
And we called ourselves, the Demolition Squad. This was like, like the ninth grade, I think. Embarrassing.
So you started very young. You're talking about when you were a freshman in high school to what you're bringing out now. There's been like a growth and a maturity. And where do you think that came from?
Life, I guess.
Life in general, huh?
Yeah.
But honestly, there's a lot of artists that no matter what they go through or no matter what life throws at them, they're still stuck. And I won't mention any names because I don't want to embarrass people, and that's not what our show is about. But I've noticed some artists that you're like, okay, you're still rapping about the cars and the cash and the women in not very positive ways, and you're like a grown-ass man, and you think by now you'd kind of start rapping about other things. But one of the things that I've noticed with you and some of the, actually there's a few artists out of your area that I've noticed that with, that they've been able to take the art form of rap and continue to make it grow into areas that were probably taboo when you started. You know, a lot of rappers back in the day, they didn't rap about love or pain in that sense, or even about their children or their significant others. What do you think has made a difference where now that's something that you can actually rap about?
I mean, but the funny, like, the thing is, like, that bugs me is, like, people did rap about love back then. LL Cool J was one of the first rappers out from back then. Like, and yet people act like rap is no, like, you're not allowed, unless you sell cocaine and slangs whatever all day long and bust guns, you're not allowed to rap. I don't know when that started. Well, actually, I do know when it started. It was with N.W.A. and all them.
But yes,
that's all true, and that's all, like, it's great. Nothing wrong with that. But that's not how it started. So why is it suddenly I'm not allowed to rap because I don't do that?
You know, it's funny you mention that, because that's one of the biggest misconceptions, that you would think rap's been on the scene since, well, underground since the 70s, and then, you know, obviously he started coming into the scene in the 80s, late 70s, early 80s. One of the things is that the biggest misconception that rap is rap. That's it. It's just rap in general. Whereas you have all these other genres for music that, you know, you can have country and you have pop and you have all this. So people are still ignorant about the fact that rap has many facets and genres within rap. Mm. Why do you think that is?
People basically listen to what's on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
It's that simple. The radio plays what the teenagers are listening to, not artists that actually are saying anything. Like, Slaughterhouse is one of my favorite groups. They're a little violent with what they say. They're more angry rap. But they're some of the smartest dudes ever, and you will never hear them on the radio. You won't hear Talib Kweli on the radio. You won't hear Mos Def on the radio. But you'll hear whatever song is repeating the same thing over and over again.
You know, that's funny you mentioned that, because that's one of my pet peeves with probably why I don't listen to commercial radio, which is ironic when I have a radio show. Because one of the things that aggravates me, and I think this is the thing that started me wanting to do my own show, is because I wanted to be able to get more independent artists airtime, is the fact that the thinking man's rapper doesn't get signed as much as they should. I mean, when they're actually, you know, like some of your stuff and some of the other stuff that I've heard, where it's one of these, wait, hold on, let me replay that again, because there's just so much coming at you so fast and so deep. Honestly, like you said, it seems like there's a dumbing down of America when it comes to music, that unless we're going, yeah, baby, 50 times, and then some, you know, sticky note in the background is considered an instrumental, it doesn't sell, because people don't want to think about it. They don't want to have anything that's going to give them a headache. And it's kind of sad to me that that happens. But one of the things I want to do, I actually played your song already at the beginning because I loved it, but I want to play it again because I want, I need to play it again because I love it. My Heart is such an amazing song, and the stuff you do with it is really cool. So for our listeners, I want to play this song, and then actually I'm going to ask you a few questions about it when we come back. So for our listeners, this is My Heart by Urban Evans.
Nothing but healing. They always did say the games that we play Girl, all I know is that I hope you never go away. Baby, please don't forget about trust. No negotiation, this is a must. Our simple lust turned into love. Now there's nothing I would ever put above. No, girl, you are my heart. You're the one I've been searching for. You held me down from the start.
Amazing. It just blew me away, especially because I've known you for so long. I mean, I'm like going, whoa, my baby's grown up. I love it.
It seems to surprise a lot of people for some reason.
Good Lord. The instrumentals are so amazing. One of the things that gets me is, and you know this, as a musician, you know this, some artists will get a really mellow kind of instrumental like this with this track, yeah, and then try to freaking, I don't know, talk about war and crap going along with it. But the lyrics you wrote to it.
There's a funny story behind that, but I'm sorry to interrupt that.
Nope, go ahead, tell me. I want to know the story. How did you come up with this?
Well, there was no beat to write to. I actually wrote that song before a beat, and the beat was made around me singing it.
Mhm.
Yeah. I was laying in bed at like 4 a.m. in the morning one day and just ended up writing half of that song. And then like 3 days later, I ended up at work on my lunch break and ended up writing the rest of that song, like the chorus and everything. I still remember like walking into the building and just started writing, "Girl, you are my heart." Like, I don't know where it came from, but it just popped up at that point. And then I ended up going to the studio, shout out Surefire Studios. I ended up going to the studio, my boy Brady ended up making the beat around me as I was singing it. And he's a genius. That's all I can really say, because dude's a master of his craft. He somehow made an amazing beat around me singing. And I'm a pretty good singer, but I'm not that great. He made me sound a little bit better than I really am. Like, let's not get it twisted.
No, I'm telling you, I love it. It just, I don't know, I think the song is just perfect for your vocals. And the thing is that it just gets under your skin in a good way. It's like you could listen to it all day, and it's just that mellow kind of vibe. Man, I love it.
But,
so,
I mean, you know me, that's basically my vibe. So that's hopefully.
No, I do. I mean, I know, because I know you're that mellow kind of person and stuff. But So you came up with this concept. You went into the studio. Now, how did you come up with to put it all together with the therapy sessions mixtape?
I've honestly been trying to figure. I've had a couple of these songs for a while now. My Heart is the last song that I've recorded, and somehow it ended up being the best song I've recorded to date. And
absolutely. I mean, you have recorded some really cool stuff, but this song, man, it's like, why isn't this on the radio?
I've been getting that a lot, so hopefully God helps me somehow make that happen. I don't know. But that song ended up somehow being made, and then all I kept thinking was, I need to somehow get this out there. Everyone that heard that song said, you need to get this out. So I immediately decided to make the video. The video is doing very well, but I need to somehow get that out a lot more. Like, I need to push that out a lot more to somehow get radio's attention. I've had these songs for a while now, and I've just been waiting to find a way to release it. And you can get it on thatpiff.com/UrbanEvans. You can download the entire mixtape or stream it, whichever you like. I've had these songs for a little bit. I'm sorry I keep saying that. And I've wanted to release them, and I wasn't sure how to do that. iTunes is coming very soon. And just wait for the mixtape. I mean, wait for the album at this point.
Right. So for our fans, if for our listeners, if you want, you can check out Irving Evans Music on Facebook, as well as what other website do you have?
I'm sorry, which one did you just say, Erica?
You have the Irving Evans Music fan page on Facebook.
Yeah, you can go to my twitter.com/UrbanEvans. You can go to my YouTube at /UrbanEvans100. And SoundCloud.com/UrbanEvans.
So you heard that, listeners. If you want to hear more of this amazing music and more therapy sessions, that's where you want to go. So I had another song that you sent me, but for some reason my control board's being a little sketchy tonight, so I'm hoping that it's uploaded for next week so I can actually play it. But I was looking forward to hearing that as well. So where do you see yourself going in the future with this, the music, and what do you see yourself being able to accomplish?
And hopefully at this point, my main goal really is just to make sure that I get a record deal and my music's heard.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really have a million other goals after that. This is like being the best rapper of all time and all this other stuff. At this point in time, I just somehow want to get in the game. Like, Massachusetts
is
never recognized for rap. Never. And there's a lot of good talent around here.
That blows my mind. You're very true. And when I started my show back in 2009, that was one of the reasons where I had the opportunity to go to different shows and different events. And again, I've been around, it just blew my mind, all this talent, and I'm like, why are people not getting recognized? And then the fact that there was always this misconception about, well, if you're going to have a rap concert or a rap show, it's going to be problems, because, again, people always associated rap with just certain subcultures, not with the stuff that you guys are coming up with. So it would be nice to actually see that change, because it would be nice to actually get someone signed and to be able to show the rest of the world that rap has a lot more to offer than just the stereotypical, you know, like you said, gangbanging kind of stuff that people associated with. Because honestly, this particular song, My Heart, just blew me away, because it just talked to me about that's what it's about. It's not about the stuff that's on the radio every day that, again, because people don't want to think about it. They just want to hear something in the background, and basically that's it. So do you have more stuff in the works? What are some of the other stuff that you have coming down the pipe? Now, you said the CD is going to be coming out. When would that be available for people?
That's available right now on thatpiff.com/UrbanEvans. You can download it or stream it right now.
So for our listeners, I put it in the chat room, www.thatpiff.com batpiff.com. You can go to the website and you can download the CD for your enjoyment. And make sure you support this amazing artist. Also go to Urban Evans Music fan page. Make sure you like his page, spread it, let it get the word out there, because these are the people that really need to get the recognition that they need, because the talent is amazing. It just blows my mind. It was amazing having you on the show, Irvin. I'm so glad that we finally got to get you on. Is there anybody you'd like to give a shout out to, or a hey, what's up to?
I don't do shout outs. Just up to everybody. I don't do shout outs.
Absolutely not. Well, again, Irvin, thank you so much for being on the show. And again, to our listeners, make sure you go to Facebook, Irvin Evans Music, or to www.datpiff.com. If you want to get his music. His CD is called Therapy Sessions, the mixtape. So, Irvin, thank you so much for being on the show, and we look forward to maybe hearing from you in a few months, see what's going on.
Thanks for having me, and definitely.
You're welcome, hon. Have a good night.
You too.
So that was Irvin Evans, and I cannot believe our first show back after this has gone by so quickly. So we have a great treat in store for you next Tuesday, which is funny because I'm kind of doing it here on the fly. We are going to have the phenomenal, talented Seth Chitwood. He is going to be on our show next Tuesday from 9 to 11, and we're actually going to have him for the whole two-hour segment because, for those of you that don't know, Seth is actually the genius, the evil mastermind behind Angelwood Films. Now, for those of you that don't know Seth, he is a 22-year-old genius. He started doing a web series called Red Circles. Then he created one called Family Problems. There's another one coming up called Lungs and World's Worst Directors. You've got to watch these shows. He's 22 years old. He's won several awards for all of his web series, and it's definitely going to be a good time. Not only are we going to have Seth, we're going to have quite a few of the actors that are on the different shows as well. So I hope you guys tune in. In the meantime, you can check out Seth Chitwood on Facebook, or you can go to Angelwood Pictures and check that out as well. You can go to YouTube, check out World's Worst Director, hysterical, I might add, or Family Problems, another really good show that's kind of a thriller kind of there. Red Circles will be wrapping up its final season this year, one of my personal favorites since I get to actually play a role in it. I'm Dr. Hutchinson, the medical examiner. So, yeah, definitely go check it out. And, of course, Lungs will be starting up soon. So I hope you guys go check that out. In the meantime, a little bit more housework. Remember, if you are in the Pennsylvania area, September 15th, we will be having our inaugural Sarah Joy Foundation fundraiser road race, 5K. You can run it, you can walk it, or you can sponsor a virtual runner, or you can sponsor a team. Please feel free to go to our website, www.sarahsjoyfoundation.org. Or you can check it out on Run the Day. It's advertised on there as well. All the information is there or on Facebook. So please, please, please come on down. And if you can't make it, then definitely try to sponsor a virtual runner, which means you make a $25 tax-deductible donation and you are entered into a pool to be able to win some amazing prizes just for helping out a good cause. Also, we will be doing a toy drive. Woo, can't talk anymore. A toy drive for Toys for Tots, so you are welcome to donate a unwrapped new toy for a child. And if you can, you can go to our website and make a donation through our PayPal account. Every little bit counts. Well, it's that time. We get to wind it down for the evening, and I am so blessed and grateful to have you guys here. So my inspirational thought for the night, it's Thoughtful Tuesday. Remember, nothing is impossible to the willing heart. If you want it, if you will it, if you dream it, if you're passionate, there is nothing that can keep you from obtaining your life's desire. Remember, it's not a job if you're actually doing something that you love and passionate about. So for all of you that joined us, thank you so much. The pleasure was totally mine to have the honor of you dedicating 2 hours of your life to listening to us. And remember, There is nothing impossible. So seize the day, seize the moment, carpe diem. And I am going to leave you tonight with this great song that I love because I haven't heard it in a while. It's called Take a Stand by Jenna Donovan. So have a blessed night, have a good week, and remember, always stay blessed.
Things are changing across the